Okay, you've got the numbers. I think it's about time we'll bring you in on the discussion now. Phone calls with our guest, Michael Cremo. And just as a reminder, Thursday night will be our special live roundtable discussion on 9/11. And since I announced it just a few weeks ago, there's been some more breaking news about it. Of course, we had a story last night, former economist with the administration talking about it as well. So those ingredients will be added to the program. To the mix, but that's Thursday night. Just circle it on your calendar. Don't miss that Coast to Coast. We'll be right back with Michael Cremo and you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I can't wait to get my webcam up and running so all of you can see the mutiny taking place in the studio right here. I'll be able to document this, and you'll be able to see it going on, and you'll be able to protect me from these people. Michael Cremo, our guest. Michael, by the way, the book, Human Devolution, let's talk about where you can get it before we go to these massive phone calls. Where can you find it?
Well, you can find it on my website, mcremo.com, mcremo.com. There's also a toll-free number, 1-888-465-3686, 888-465-3686. It's available in bookshops and internet booksellers as well.
Amazon get it? They have it?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
yeah,
very good. Okay, and Human Devolution also is a related website, so that is linked up right now to you on coasttocoastam.com. You can get right to it. I think we may have helped crash your M. Cremo website, by the way.
Oh, have to ask my
sorry, Michael, but we just sent a few million people your way and just jammed the whole thing up. The work that you have done also has got to irritate some people. You get a lot of publicity. You get exposure. You know, you're a favorite on Coast to Coast. How do some of these other scientists feel about the kind of publicity you generate?
Well, some of them don't like it very much. I think Richard Leakey said some nasty things about me once, like, your book is pure humbug. Nobody would take it seriously but a fool. this NBC television special, Mysterious Origins of Man, that I was a consultant for and appeared on, was the Darwinist scientists in America tried to stop NBC from showing it. When it did air, they went to the FCC and tried to get the FCC to fine NBC for having run this program. And so there is that element there that would like to see me banned from the airwaves and never be allowed to speak at a university. I went to one European country, and the scientists there passed a resolution that I shouldn't be asked to speak at any of the universities there. But so you do get that kind of reaction. But
I think your theories are refreshing.
Yeah, and as I said, the world of science itself is not monolithic. There is this what I would call fundamentalist Darwinist element there that doesn't like me very much and wouldn't like, you know, to hear me speak at their university or at one of their conferences. But there are people who do like to hear me, even within the mainstream scientific world. I'm always getting invitations to, you know, speak at different scientific conferences and universities. So it's I think it's what I see is that we're in the middle of what I call a fundamental renegotiation of our whole picture of reality. And I think there are a lot of participants in that renegotiation. There are people like me from the alternative science community, people like yourself, mainstream scientists, ordinary people, people who may be members of different religious organizations or whatever, or paranormal people, UFO researchers. I think there's a whole movement going on now. And I think the end result is we're going to come to a new consensus about the nature of reality. In terms of the dominant ideas in our society.
All right, let's go to the phones. You ready, Michael?
Sure.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with our guest, Michael Cremo. Hi there.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And where are you, sir?
My name is Charles. I'm calling from Maryland. Now, I was in Virginia when I first called.
Driving through. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, how you doing? This question is not intended to offend anyone that may be listening, but I just thought about this when I was listening to your guest. It just popped in my head, talking about ancient civilizations and ancient people, and comparing the ancient people to today's people. You know, all your nationality of people having round eyes. Do your guests believe, like I say, I don't intend to offend anyone. Do you believe that the Asian, more specific, the Japanese could be like ancient crossbreeds of alien race, you know, being that genetics and the today, how, you know, they are considered more intelligent than other people? Could they be like a descendant of like a crossbreed of human and alien?
All right, well, I'll let you sink your teeth in that, Michael. And Charles, you can listen on your radio. What about those possibilities?
Well, I think we're all, you know, extraterrestrials. We've all come down from some higher level of reality, and I think we've all got, we may each of ourselves be more intelligent than we think we are. You know, so in terms of that, since I think all of the beings here on Earth have come from the same place, really, I think really we're all of the same level of intelligence if we could access it all. So I think each one of us, as a conscious being, as a spirit self, is equal. Now, I do believe, however, that there are among people on Earth some who have these the sort of ancestry that he's talking about. If you look at what the traditional Japanese account of their ruling family is, the idea is that they were originally descended from some goddess connected with the sun, and they came to this planet to carry out some activities here, and that's the distinction that they make. But this is something that we find in other cultures as well. In the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, it's described that the royal families had either a connection with the sun god or the moon god, and some of them were members of these royal families. It said that they were, that part of their ancestry was terrestrial, and some connected with these divine beings. You know, for example, there was one group in the royal families called the Pandavas, and they had a joint ancestry like that: a terrestrial mother, divine fathers, and it's something that you find repeated in practically all the different wisdom traditions down through history. If you examine them, you'll see that there are some earth people who have these two strains in their ancestry, terrestrial and extraterrestrial. But ultimately, I would say we're all extraterrestrials. I mentioned this devolution process, that we didn't evolve up from matter, that we've all devolved or come down from some higher level of the cosmos, a level dominated by pure spirit or consciousness. And it's a process that can be reversed. There's a process of spiritual re-evolution, and we can all access our original nature, which is extraterrestrial, ultimately.
Michael, what do you think Charles Darwin would say if he had a chance to meet with you?
Some people say I'm a reincarnation of Charles Darwin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they say I've come back. I've had to take another birth
with a change
to correct the little mistake that I made. So it may be that I'm talking to myself right now.
Maybe.
But I actually have quite a bit of respect for Charles Darwin, because at a time when nobody accepted his ideas, he had the courage to stand up and say, well, this is what I believe. Now, after 150 years, I would say, if he were to come back, I'd say it was a good try, Chuck. Good try, Charles. But I think after 150 years of trying, the evidence really doesn't support what you're saying in your book, The Origin of Species. And
I think he was probably enough of a gentleman and enough of a scholar to change his ideas. Now, I think his modern supporters are in a different position. I think they've adopted their position not so much from a scientific point of view, but from an ideological point of view, and I don't know if they'd be prepared to give it up. I think he was enough of an intellectual and a scholar and a scientist and a gentleman to realize that after 150 years, his idea didn't work out.
Let's go to first time caller line. You're up. Hi there.
Hi, this is Angel from Peoria. Hi, Michael. Hi, George.
Angel. How are you?
Hi, Angel.
I'm pretty good. I want to say I agree with what you're saying. And I just wonder, you said that we've devolved, and do you think that our self-awareness or our consciousness is affected by the things that we eat today, like a lot of fast food and just the things that we think, our thoughts?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, for 35 years, I've been a vegetarian. I don't, you know, try to, you know, push it on other people, but since you're asking about it, yes, I do believe that what we eat does affect our consciousness, and I've tried to make sure that my eating habits are in line with, you know, my values and what I believe. So that's led me to a vegetarian diet. And also I think that there's a little bit more to that as well. I think the consciousness with which you prepare food and in these ancient civilizations, and the idea was that all these things that we eat are being provided to us by higher powers. So there was some recognition of that, and I mean, even today people will say grace or something as some kind of recognition that, you know, we're being we're existing on gifts that have been provided to us. So I think that's also important, and that's something I try to take into account as well.
Okay, thanks, Angel. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, good morning, George. Good morning, guest.
Yes.
You know, I'm a physician assistant, and I review lab tests all the time for people that are going to surgery, and there's such a delicacy. Like if you take the potassium, the serum potassium concentration, it's so small that minor changes in the concentration, they have a significant consequence on the human being, and that's just potassium. But what about the mind? When you talked about matter, mind, and consciousness all being put together in a complex way, to be honest with you, my wife has schizophrenia. When she decompensates and she doesn't take her medicine, she says the most profound things. I won't go into them now, but it's like we seem to be masking something that might be eye-opening. The psychiatrists, I have a lot of respect for them, but a lot of times they suppress a lot of things by giving them medications. George, you had a guest on Dr. Abramson's, you know,
yes.
Overdosed in America. Remember that one?
I
live with a situation like this, and sometimes when my wife gets off of her medicine, she'll say things that nobody I've ever gone to school with or anything else, and not like a savant, but, I mean, do we suppress things sometimes when we should be exploring it?
Well, I think you're right about that, and I think our whole medical system has evolved in concert with this whole trend towards materialism, because if you think that a human being is just a combination of chemicals, and if you think that that's all there is to the brain, to the body, then you're going to have a medical system that's going to concentrate on drugs, basically, because drugs are molecules, and you think, well, if I can, you know, inject somebody or give somebody some molecules that will adjust their molecules, that's going to solve their problem. Now, that may solve part of the problem, but that doesn't address the mind and the conscious self. So I think what alternative
medical systems that existed in these ancient civilizations were aware of. They were aware, much more aware of the connections between the body, between the mind, and between the conscious self. And they were able to put into their medical systems techniques and that would take all of that into account, whereas we're just focusing on the bottom level and not aware of the subtle connections between the body, between the mind, and the conscious self. So I think if you look at Ayurveda, if you look at Chinese medicine, if you look at all these alternative medical systems, you'll see that if you look at the physiology that they were working with, it was a physiology that didn't include just the gross physical body, but also the subtle body of mind and intelligence, and beyond that, the actual conscious self. And they took all of those things into account. So I think you're right that just by trying to deal with these very subtle problems with just chemical interventions may be not the proper way to go about it. It may be partially helpful. You know, undoubtedly you can do something with these chemicals, but I think it's not reaching to the real depths of the person, the self, the mind.
Michael, when you were doing your work into these ancient civilizations, the ones that, you know, you say are millions and millions of years old, was there anything there that just really was earth-shattering to you when you found it out?
Well, what I found most earth-shattering, you could say, is not any particular case of evidence for extreme human antiquity or anything like that. What I found most earth-shattering was the amount of evidence that has been subjected to this knowledge filtering process. All the archaeological evidence, all this research into the paranormal by famous scientists, all this evidence that we live in a multi-level cosmos that's designed for life, all this evidence for the existence of beings existing at different levels of this cosmic hierarchy. That's what I found most earth-shattering, that there's so much evidence like this that has been filtered out of our normal knowledge system. And that's something I would like to see changed, because I think what's happened is that you've got a very relatively small but influential group of scientists who have some very materialistic conceptions of life, who have more or less hijacked our education system, and they've somehow or other induced our government through its judicial system to say that only their ideas can be taught in the official education system. I think that's got to change.
All right, we'll be back. We'll take final phone calls. It'll be our final segment in just a moment. On Coast to Coast AM, I'm George Norrie with our guest Michael Cremo right here on Coast to Coast. Michael, how advanced was the Vedic civilization compared to other civilizations on the planet at the time?
It seems to have been pretty advanced. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the ancient Sanskrit writings speak of vimanas, or spacecraft, and they had different kinds. Some of them were capable of traveling to ordinary planets like ours on our level of reality, but they also had extra-dimensional craft that could travel up and down through the cosmic hierarchy, going all the way up to the level of pure consciousness. So they had quite a bit of communication with the other levels of the cosmic hierarchy of beings that were part of levels that we currently are not communicating with.
Well, if they had this kind of craft and this kind of technology, how do we know that they weren't visitors as opposed to, you know, Earth beings, Earthlings?
Well, we're all visitors, according to the human devolution concept, because we've all come from that topmost level of the cosmos, the level of pure consciousness or spirit. So in that sense, we're all extraterrestrials. We're all extra-dimensional beings. But we've forgotten that. But I think if you look at every great spiritual tradition of the world, you see they have some process of prayer or meditation or yoga or contemplation that's meant to help us understand that, understand what our position in this cosmic hierarchy of is, and get us moving back to our original position.
And let's go back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Matt. George, Mike.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
A little nervous. There's a cave or cavern down in South America,
mm-hmm.
and also one up in the north, around Alaska, maybe further north. And it's these UFOs have been coming in and out of there for a long, long time. And I have a friend of mine that's in intelligence, and he's showed me pictures, and he showed me pictures also of the Russians taking those missiles out of Iraq and all that. But does Michael know anything about these caves? And if he does, I was told by my friend to, if anybody was ever going to go up into there, that they shouldn't do it, that they would be risking
their own lives. Huh?
Yeah.
Michael, have you heard of this?
Well, yes, I have heard of this sort of thing, especially from South America. You know, I've heard a lot about caves down in that region. There's some reports, you know, from some of these ancient Sanskrit writings and from some of the spiritual teachers of India that there used to be a cave system by which you know, some of these beings would travel from Brazil, the area around Brazil, where there was a lot of gold, to South India. So we're still hearing about these things today, about these cave systems. I haven't visited any of them myself. I've been to Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico, but that's as close as I've come to big underground caves.
Okay, thanks for the call, Matt. Appreciate it. It's always good to have someone in the know like that, somebody in. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Junia. I'm calling from Tulsa.
Junia, that's different. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Junia.
Hello, Michael. I'm really impressed with all your research and knowledge, and I would like to submit my conviction and then hear what you have to say. I don't think Darwin should be so hastily dismissed. I believe that he was absolutely correct as far as the body is concerned. The missing link is the spirit, and we descend into creation as spirit germs or spirit seeds that grow to higher levels of consciousness, ultimately to return to where we came from. And while the animistic beings were forming matter, and the animal developed to the noble ape-like animal instead of an animal soul incarnating, when the human spirit on the other side had grown to enough maturity that it was able to handle the physical world, then the human spirit incarnated. And we have since then develop the human body from the animal form that it was originally to this higher form, because we are spiritual beings. So I would like to hear your comment on that, because I think Darwin was absolutely right.
Okay. Well, as far as the spirit beings coming down and being put into the bodies and things like that, that I agree with. The disagreement I would have with Darwin is that I think all the different vehicles or bodies were there, and that what the evolution is not the evolution of the body, but the evolution of the conscious self through the different bodies that are there. You know, just like in any city, you may have different kinds of houses. All kinds of houses are there. And a person, according to their level of income, a young married couple, for example, they might start out renting an apartment. Then they might buy a small house. And if they prosper, they may get a bigger house. All those things are there, but they just move through them. So I would agree with you. The basic outline that you gave, I would agree with. The only thing I would disagree with is about the physical forms, whether one physical form comes from another or whether all the different forms were originally there and it's just that soul, that conscious self that moves through the different forms. That's what I think the real evolution of consciousness is.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Junie. I appreciate you calling Coast to Coast. First-time caller line, you're up. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
This is Dave in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Bear with me for a moment. I'll try to articulate this the best I can.
Okay, Dave.
The way my thoughts are going here. But something that you guys mentioned earlier was how everything seems to be put together consciously, otherwise we'd have no life in the universe. And that got me pondering the idea that I truly believe that that human consciousness is infinite and can acquire infinite knowledge. And who's to say that we can't take that and create realms of universes ourselves and use that and harvest those universes for the betterment of humanity? Just kind of an idea that I had.
Well, I think you're on the track of something that's really true. According to what I found out, through my studies in these ancient Sanskrit writings, is we are part of a cosmic hierarchy, and there are beings that exist at higher levels of this cosmic hierarchy than we are. And some of those at the higher levels of the cosmic hierarchy do have that ability to engineer universes for the positive benefit of the souls that are in them. So that's something that's there. Say if somebody wanted to occupy that position, they would have to qualify themselves by evolving up through that cosmic hierarchy of beings till they got to that level where they would be allowed by, you could say, the supreme cosmic being to have that kind of position. But even then, they wouldn't become infinite. They just become much more powerful than we are in our present position. Because I would say there is already kind of one, I do believe that there is a God, and that we may get a lot of power from God, but we're never going to become God ourselves. That's the way I would look at it. And that you may even become so powerful that you could become the master of a universe and have a lot to do with the running of that universe, just like, I don't know, maybe if you're a manager of a store or something, like Walmart or something, you may be a manager of the store and have a lot to do with what goes on in it, but still you're not the president of the whole company. So I think we're in a position like that where we could rise up through the cosmic hierarchy of beings until we had some position like that. But I think that whole, it's better just to go back beyond all these universes, back to the position where we really started out with, which is just as pure spiritual beings with nothing to do with matter at all.
All right, let's try east of the Rockies. You're up with Michael Cremo. Hi there.
Morning, George.
Yes,
Michael.
Sir. Hi.
I'm George from Fosteria, Ohio.
Hello, George.
Hello, George.
And hello, and I would like to see what you think about this idea. I'm an abductee, so I've got a different point of view.
All right.
I think somewhere along the time of Neanderthal, something happened, and there was a genetic alteration made, which not only gave Cro-Magnon, which is us, the ability to think, but to reason and, to learn and make tools. That's a pretty big jump for no fossil evidence of a connection there. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the problem I would have with that is there's fossil evidence showing that humans existed, humans like us, anatomically modern humans, existed, you know, before the time of the Neanderthals even, because the Neanderthals died out around 30 or 40,000 years ago in Europe, and they existed from, according to the, you know, the current understandings, from maybe about 150,000 years ago or 125,000 years ago until about 30 or 40,000 years ago. So if we're going to say the human beings like us came from these Neanderthals, it would have had to have happened within, you know, the past 100,000 years or so. But there are anatomically modern human skeletal remains from many places in Europe. I mentioned a few of them earlier in the show, from Castanedolo and from Savona in Italy and from other places that are far older than that. They go back 4 or 5 million years. Here in America, I mentioned earlier in the show, an anatomically modern human skeleton that was found in Macoupin County, Illinois, at 300 million years ago. There are anatomically modern human skeletons found in the California gold mines, about 50 million years old. So that's the problem I would have with this idea that there was some fairly recent genetic modification that led to the anatomically modern human species.
Didn't they find some Egyptian artifacts also, Michael, in some caves in this country?
Well, there are a few, there are a couple of reports like that. One is from the Grand Canyon region. There was a report in a newspaper from Arizona early in the 20th century that told of some Smithsonian institution researchers that were in the Grand Canyon. They found some cave somewhere that was full of Egyptian artifacts. Now, when I tried, that's a report that you'll see on the internet quite a bit. When I tried to track down the names of any of the researchers that were mentioned by name in the report or find any record of them in the Smithsonian Institution, I wasn't able to do it, and other researchers that were trying to assist me in that were also not successful. So maybe there's something behind it, maybe there isn't. I haven't been able to verify it yet. Another report, I think we have Egyptian-type artifacts coming, is from a place called Burroughs Cave. But as far as I know, the last I heard, the people who made those discoveries are not revealing the location
right,
of the place.
Right, right.
So that makes it difficult for somebody like me, you know, who would be trying to convince skeptics of something to the things I mentioned in my books. I like to have some
fact there, huh?
If the site can be identified and you can look at the geological reports about the place and, you know, things like that, it becomes a little easier. Yeah, for me to talk about it. So, but I think there are other signs of, I mean, I think if we really look, I think there are inscriptions, there are other types of evidence throughout the Americas showing that the Americas were in touch with these ancient civilizations in the old world, be they Egyptian or Roman or Libyan or Indian. I think by looking at the architecture in South America and Central America and Mexico, you get some idea of that. But yes, you do find some reports like that.
Old Christopher Columbus was not the number one, was he?
No, far from it.
Yep. Gets the credit for it, though. Wildcard Line, you're up. Hi there.
Hi there. Got a question for Mike.
Sure thing, sir.
Going back into ancient civilizations and looking, but somewhere out there, there has to be a mathematic model for what I call an HPMF, which is a holographic photon magnetic frequency. Apparently, some of the specialists feel that that is the abstract thought pattern, say, in your mind, or actually a possibility one of these days of having a desktop-type cloth that will create a hologram and you can see your children and have a conversation, but it would fit your theory of, say, a neutron natural beam or its subsets able to divide so that you holographs can stay together. It means that prior to all material, your thought patterns can come through them. What do you think?
Well, I think that we are kind of like that. Because according to these ancient Sanskrit writings, everything comes from vibration, ultimately. Even the elements that we have are kind of solidified vibrations. Everything starts out from an ethereal level, the ether solidifies into other elements, that solidifies into other elements, so that what we have around us is kind of a projection of forms that exist on some higher level of reality. What we see around us is a reflection of forms that have some real existence on some higher level of reality. So you're kind of expressing it in terms of some modern scientific terminology, but to put it in plainer words, we're living in a kind of forms that are reflected from some higher level of reality, yes.
Michael's new work, of course, is called Human Devolution. You can pick it up a couple of ways. One is a toll-free number. Here it is, 1-888-465-3686. That's 1-888-465-3686. This new book is called Human Devolution, and of course it's at your big bookstores, Amazon.com as well. If you ever need to just find his website, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and after tomorrow it'll become part of Past Guests, which you'll find on the left-hand side of the screen. Michael, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being on the program.
Well, thank you very much, George. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners, and the time really goes fast on this show.
It really does. Thanks again, and you take care, Mike.
Okay, bye, George.
Michael Cremo, he says that we are millions and millions and millions of years old, which is fascinating all by itself. For Nikki Ambrinoni, Tom Danheiser, Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.